Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Douglas Frago. Douglas, welcome to the show.
Appreciate being on here. Thank you very much.
So what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the discussion is to give my guests a chance to give more of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
I'm a physician, been so for 30 years. I am a troublemaker. And that's what I am involved in this situation now, because, you know, we hear the world of burnout and we hear the world of doctors resigning and killing themselves and doing drugs. And it's a terrible situation. So I wanted to give my perspective because I've been the bad boy of medicine as far as what I have been employed by two different hospitals. I've been given performance improvement programs that were scams, I've been fired for a scam. I've seen the terrible things that have happened. I've seen why doctors are burning out. And I'm here to actually try to help CEOs and executives retain their physicians so that it saves them money, but also creates a better environment so doctors are happier and doctors will stay and recruit other happy doctors and treat patients better. Because if doctors leave and turn over, it's costing the system a ton of money and no one's happy. So I can give that inside perspective, but a lot of them don't want to hear
it. So I guess before starting to unpack a lot of that, what I'm always interested in terms of a little bit of background too, is, you know, what first brought you into the healthcare industry?
Well, I'm a physician. I always wanted to be a doctor growing up. I became a physician after college and did a few different things. And then went back to medical school, residency in Maine. And then I worked for two hospitals and then eventually did what's called direct primary care, which was on my own, which was actually the most life-saving situation for me. But I wanted to help people. And the problem with medicine is you become a line worker and you're not feel like you're helping somebody. That leads to this whole burnout thing. So why did I want to do it? I wanted to help people like every other doctor. Why is it a problem? Because we feel we can't help anybody anymore.
So in terms of what you just said about, you know, becoming a line worker, having that perception that you're being forced into kind of a role as a line worker, was the system always that way, or have you seen it move more aggressively in that direction over a period of time?
It has moved much more, and that, unfortunately, you can correlate to the amount of bureaucratic drag that is just slowing us down from doing our job. And so what is that bureaucratic drag? Whether it was, you can see the famous graph by the Labor and Statistics, Bureau of Labor and Statistics, of there's a 3,000% increase of administrators. And the doctor level have never changed. We've never had more doctors. It's the same amount. And so all that administrators is putting things on our back that wasn't there. So I didn't have the EMRs back then when I started. It didn't have prior authorizations. Insurance companies had HMOs, but it wasn't as bad as it is now. There was no metrics. And reality, what burned us out, if something burned us out, was, well, dealing with hard patients and dealing with difficult situations, which is hard enough as it is. But when you add this other layer of absolute crap that does not affect care, and you talk about metrics, they have been proven to do nothing other than to cost us time and cost us heartache and waste what we could be giving to patients. So yeah, I have seen things get worse and I don't see it getting better. And I see the same groups that actually allowed this to happen claim they're gonna fix it now. The same AMA, AAFP, all these, I see ads on Facebook, we're gonna help you with your burnout. Dude, you helped cause the burnout. You're supposed to represent us and you agreed to it all. And now we're in a situation where people are dying. The doctor kills himself every day or herself every day. So it makes me sad. And I think there's things that can be done. No one can fix some of this stuff now without a major change. And that's what I did with direct primary care. But there is some things you can go in and actually help doctors with, which I don't know if they care about doing. It is very bothersome to me.
And did you see any factors or influences that kind of drove the system in this direction? Or was it kind of just a slow accumulation of small pieces over time that all of a sudden just kind of ran out of control?
Well, I think we all saw it. I mean, it is that boiling frog kind of thing that got slower and slower. But the bottom line is, as we allowed insurance companies to believe that their healthcare, we are a healthcare company. No, you're not. Your insurance is supposed to be when catastrophic things happen. That's the way it is in every other industry. Somehow they got involved in caring, which means siphoning off the money between the what the patient pays and what the doctor gets. A patient pays what the doctor accepts. So the middlemen have destroyed the whole healthcare system. And I don't know if that's fixable right now. And the only way I've seen that I can fix it, which was direct primary care, which we just did a membership model and said, okay, come as often as you want, 30 to 60 minutes. And that was great care. And doctors were smiling again. So I've seen the endpoint, how it could be good. But I felt always bad. You know, I've written 3 books on direct primary care, and I always felt bad that I couldn't help those who I left back in the system. And I said, I spent years researching what can be helped by looking at other industries. What are they doing to keep their employees happy? And I found it, and I've collected it. And it bothers me that, wait, do these hospitals do want to keep these doctors happy? Because it saves so much money when they, if you keep them. And I don't know if we're at that point where I put the book out, advanced copies, and I got horrific reviews from administrators. Doctors love it, but physician, and it's not an attack on administrators, but the book that I wrote on physician retention, they did not love.
So, you know, as you said, retention is a primary issue because, you know, if you can figure out strategies that I suspect are not really all that, uncommon or groundbreaking, but probably go very much in a direction of common sense and just treating people decently. You know, so yes. From your perspective, what are ways that organizations can improve retention and, as you said, kind of help restore that joy in practice?
Well, you know, part of the thing is they're going to have to analyze your situation, and I'm afraid they're not going to do that. They talk about turnover rate, you know. Our turnover rate's not very bad. Like, okay, have you really analyzed it? Because the reality is no one knows what that number is. And what I have found is they're all lying. And so they pick and choose because they don't want to show that the turnover rate is high. And no third party is actually analyzing that. So I actually have in the book a way to analyze it using what's called the Net Promoter Score. You may have heard of that, but where you just want, because first of all, I've been the employed doctor. When we see surveys, we don't do them. Okay. Either we don't do them or we lie. Right? Because there's a fear factor that it's going to come back and haunt you. And so I can't trust anything that's coming out that's not done with by a qualified third party. If a third party, and I have a company now, if you go to physicianretention.com to do this, but if you could ask doctors one question, would you recommend this hospital to a colleague to work for? One question. And it was anonymous and guaranteed anonymous, you would get a net promoter score. And that's, there's a way to predict that, to do that. And I think what the author who actually started this, Reichhold, who started this whole thing of net promoter scores, healthcare industry is way in the negative range, where like you see tech in the positive 50 range, healthcare is in the negative, except that they're owned by physicians. So there's ways to get it to a positive range, but you got to analyze it first. And then just like how we do as doctors, we do a history of present illness. It'd be a history of what's going on. See what's been gone on before with other consultants. See speak to the physicians as if you're one of them. Because the bottom line, the other things we don't like, and people don't understand this, is when you hear a consultant's coming in, we are definitely closing off our show. We don't trust them. We think they're patsies for the administration, and it doesn't rarely goes well. And I've seen this multiple times where it just was. A horrific incident. So it has to be a trustworthy consultant. And that's why I didn't think I'd be doing this. But as a physician, I've been the bad boy. I've been the bad doc as far as not quality of physician, but as far as pushing back on administration. So I know what they're feeling. So I definitely could, you need someone to go in there and get a pulse of what's going on. But there's other things that I mentioned in the book, and that's why I wrote the whole book about it.
And so kind of, as you said, you know, beyond just getting that understanding of, you know, would people actually recommend the facility? You know, what are some of the strategies that, you know, a facility or organization, because I suspect this might apply to, you know, any large group, whether it's a hospital or not, like any place where you've got non-physician ownership, you know, like what can you do to start finding out what the true issues are? And we'd kind of like to unpack that before we then turn to what do you do to start addressing it and making it so people actually want to be there.
Right. So I've been in, let me go to this, say how not to do it. I've had it where if consultants have come in and we form all these committees, and then we were going to discuss what things were needed. And we had like five different subcommittees for a year. And I remember distinctly one of the physicians saying, okay, our committee decided we definitely need an orthopedic surgeon for our hospital for this reason. And it was a great idea. And then the CEO stood up and said, no, we're not doing that, sat back down. And then everything that each committee subcommittee decided that we should have done was rejected. And no one ever joined the committee again since I was at the hospital for 10 years. If we joined the committee, it was fake. And so one thing is you have to, for doctors to be happy and want to stay at a place, they want to feel valued and listened to, and they want to have a meaningful relationships with their patients and their coworkers. So right off the bat, the CEO is just placating and say, yeah, bring this somebody in on retention. We'll let them do some work on that. There's not 100% buy-in. I would have no interest in working with them. It's nothing personal, but I know it's not going to go anywhere. Now, what you can do for, you may not know with physicians. I mean, listen, they've taken away things like Doctor's Day. Over half doesn't even recognize Doctor's Day. That's the easiest, simplest thing you could be doing. And when I started, it used to be a banquet and would be awards and be great. Now it became nothing, not even an email. Okay. It's not recognized. We used to have a physician liaison. It was someone who was like a mother hen. She was an ex-nurse and would get us our things that we needed for the lounge or for a white coat or whatever, gone. And I've seen all these things happen then when they were positive, and we were recruiting other physicians to work for our hospital. Once those things went away, those doctors were leaving. I talk about this other story too. I mean, we had a doctor's lounge, which they get rid of the doctor's lounge, another thing. And we used to have fresh coffee and biscotti. And I remember bragging to somebody else, saying, this is how good it is here. Just that little biscotti made an impression on me that I was able to recruit other doctors to come. And that ended up getting 10 more doctors in that hospital, which is absurd amount of family physicians to build that department. Was it all from the biscotti? No, but it was a sense of, you know, they cared about us enough. And if you're not doing those little things matter. And if you're not doing it, doctors feel it. And I'm telling you that doctors now feel just devalued. They feel like they're being told. Well, one reason they feel like they can be replaced is they're told we can replace you. and they're like, okay. And that's how the turnover happens.
And kind of touching on that concept of devaluation, as you said, other than being told we can easily replace you, whether or not that's actually true, you know, what are some of the other ways that you've seen that have kind of suggested or directly shown a devaluation of the role of the physician by a facility?
I'll give you an example that just came out in the news of it's a hospital in California, I think it was San Jose, and there was a walkout by physicians and also the ER. And I wrote about it in my blog, and I got responded to by a physician who was higher up in the organization saying, well, this is not in that hospital, but the organization that hired them saying, I'm not sure these doctors were right. And here's the CEO's response. And the CEO's response was basically everything these doctors were complaining about were wrong. Well, dude, doctors don't walk out, okay? So you may think they're wrong on everything, but you don't really care to find out because doctors don't just walk out. And they literally said our turnover rate is the norm. We have a great system. Who's right and who's wrong? Does it really matter? Something is wrong there when doctors are on strike. So you have to care enough and you've got to remove your ego enough, and doctors as well. And I'm not saying all doctors are right. And there's a 15%, I think, of doctors that in my estimation over the years that I wouldn't want to hang out with either. I don't think they're all fun and great and everything either. And I'm not saying every administrator is evil, but what I'm saying is everybody's got to drop their ego and work on this. And if they don't, you're getting this turnover, and the turnover costs $1 million. Now up to $1 million to replace a physician, and the chaos it causes to their patients. Where do they go? Well, their partner's got to take their patients while you find them. And now they're burning out, right? So it's a domino effect that can go good or it can go bad. And so I think that the first thing is, okay, we should care about retention instead of recruitment. All they care about is recruitment. If your cover of my book is a, it's a bucket with holes in it and you keep filling up the bucket and has a hospital sign on it. If you want to keep filling up the bucket and you have three or four big holes, you may want to patch those freaking holes before you start filling up that bucket. It's not that hard to say, even to saying to your employee physicians, we want to retain you. We're going to bring in an ex doctor who really is on your side, not our side. And he wants to figure out how it's going to make you, what's going to make it happy. You happy here to stay. Because if you save one, for my $25 book, you save one doctor, that's $1 million. That's not a bad investment. Okay. That's Bitcoin money right there. Okay. So, you know, so it blows me away that that it's ignored, and the only people now doing physician retention are recruiting companies. Well, if you're a recruiter and you get all your, and you supposedly do retention and you get the hospital to keep all their doctors, but guess what? They don't need to recruit anymore. So it's a conflict of interest. They have, and they're all not doctors. So they have no idea what's going on. You need somebody who knows the inside scoop.
Yeah. And arguably, if you're trying to drive retention, why would you hire someone on the outside to, correct, that, as you said, in the first place, help you bring the people in? And, you know, they're, as you were pointing out, the business model is driven around continuing to find new people. Right. You know, how invested are they going to be in fixing the problems or even identifying the problems? But for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Douglas Farrago about physician retention and, you know, the lack of focus or potentially, you know, lack of desire to even address those issues. But, you know, kind of as we were just talking about, it's, you know, the cost of losing a physician and then having to replace them, as you pointed out, is very high. And I think, you know, other than historical numbers, there's actually been a lot of recent coverage around the cost of turnover to the industry. And I think, you know, within the past month or two, there was an article where it said it costs the industry billions per year.
That's just with primary care turnover, $1 billion a year of excess cost to the system. And doesn't mention the chaos to patients when these doctors leave. This is not just about, oh, making the doctor happy. It's not what I'm doing. I would like the doctor to be happy, but I want happy doctors make happier patients and retain other good, happy doctors. You don't want miserable doctors who are not smiling and become robo-docs or burned out treating you. And so as a patient, you want this to be as well. There is some answers. I never say that I'm going to fix burnout, which other organizations, we're going to help your burnout by doing. I just saw this today. Yeah, we have this great, that was an article. You can go, these doctors can go online and do some kind of module for their burnout. Yeah, that's going to happen. Okay, please. Second, the other one was, are we getting a lot of good survey results from these doctors? No, they're not answering. Because the bottom line is, you lie when you answer those because you can get fired. Okay. And here's why. I am extremely depressed. Sometimes I feel like hurting myself and sometimes I drink at night. Am I going to write that? Okay. If I'm burned out doctor doing that, because now I'm a compromised physician and actually you have to report me to the board. So no one's saying what's going on. And I'm telling you the truth. No one's saying what's going on, but we know what's going on because there are people that are killing themselves and they're great of physician drug use and so forth is not minuscule. And so, yes, you can save a lot of money, but the goal is truly to do whatever we can. I wish they changed the system. I wish they got insurance out of the system. I wish they got some of these metrics and these other garbage things that doctors are doing that are weighing them down. But there's some other things that I mentioned in the book, and you can buy the book to do that, but to look at that. And I think I go into detail of what other industries have done, so.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, not necessarily going to the specifics of what to do, but yeah, what do you see as some of the ways to help address that lack of trust that has developed? Because, you know, early on in our conversation, you're talking about the fact that there, you know, the administration might try to do something, but there is a lot of skepticism or questioning by the physicians of the motivation behind it. So, you know, what are some ways to help reestablish, you know, the trust, or at least get to a place where you don't actively think there's some, you know, hidden ulterior motive to something that's not going to be in your interest?
Well, they do need to trust the physicians. And a lot of times they like them not to be coordinated or talking. And doctors are talking all the time, whether it's online. That used to never be. Now they're talking online. So you can get a good reputation or a bad reputation online. And trust me, the bad reputation is spread. But they do need to want, they need the doctors to, doctors need a community. When people feel a sense of community and they know other physicians, and by getting rid of the lounge, by getting rid of events, by getting rid of things that doctors would get together, that has affected us terribly. And we have to be able to, administrators need to trust physicians that they can actually govern themselves and are not looking to other than trying to make better work conditions. That's part of it. They do need to trust trust physicians more, and physicians need to have that community back. And so whether that's a doctor's lounge or other things, that needs to happen. I think if they try to do a physician retention program, which by the way, I think one study just showed that there was like maybe 10% of hospitals have one. And of those 10%, half those doctors don't even think that really exists. So no one's really doing it. If you're going to do it on your own, and I mentioned this in the book, you get one shot at this. And again, if your physicians don't trust you, you need somebody to come in who's kind of not only impartial, but on the physician side. And I think to do that right, I think, and actually that would be some way that they can, if I actually was an administrator, say, listen, I'm bringing this group in who's on your side, who wants to make your life better, I think that would show a lot of trust.
Yeah, and kind of, I think a lot of the issues you've just been talking about throughout are, you know, as you said, systemic problems. So do you think that some of those systemic problems are issues that can be fixed within the industry itself, or do you think their outside intervention would prove beneficial?
Yeah, so some of the big stuff that is systemic, I don't have answers for. I do have answers for. If I get rid of the insurance company and the way we have coding and billing and metrics and all that stuff, which is irrelevant to care, would take away and where doctors can spend more time with patients, feel more complete, because that's all doctors want to do. We can fix the system. I did that with direct primary care, which is now starting to be a very positive trend. And I've helped that industry tremendously with whatever I can, because I think that's really the savior. Going back into the hospital, some can't do that, right? Some surgeons and so forth. But you know, 40 years ago, not every doctor worked for a hospital. Now I think it's like 70%. Before, it used to be like 10 or 15. That has continued to grow because they're, it's like circling the wagons to fight the insurance companies. People were bought out. We're all going to, it's us against the insurance companies. And until doctors realize, well, it's everybody against us. And so I think that insurance industry, that system's broken, that needs to be fixed. And then we have to get rid of the administrative burdens, the bureaucratic, the drag that slows doctors down. Remember, all doctors want to do, seriously, is just want to be more complete. Not so much see more patients, but do a great job with their patients. That makes us happy. Figure that out, and you figure out the burnout issue.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think a lot of what you were just talking about, you know, so much of the industry gets fueled by it, you know, even though it's not necessarily for the positive, but there is a lot of kind of monetary consideration that goes into fueling not just that, but you have a lot of very vested interests that want to keep all those components around, that you now have this very uphill battle to be fighting to get to a place where, as you keep pointing out, you should be getting to in an area where you can, again, focus on the delivery of care and the, you know, really in-depth, meaningful relationship between a physician and the patient.
Correct. There's dogma, and that's been accepted. If you look at you go to the doctor and you go for an earache and you get this 6-page note, if you wanted to see what was done, and none of that was done. Half of that was crap. Half of that was just doctors fluffing it. And it was only for coding. So who really benefited from that? The patient that you, and the only reason you have a note for a visit is so you can cover yourself from malpractice and you're doing a good job, and you can hand that note off to the next doctor in case something else went wrong. And so now you see these ER notes for a UTI that's 50 pages long, which is all fluff and nothing. And that is just to make others happy. So when you go into the room as a physician, you bring the computer in, which we didn't have to do in the past. You bring the patient, it's you and the computer. The patient leaves unsatisfied, you leave unsatisfied, and maybe the computer is satisfied just so we can get third parties happy, and then administration can get paid the utmost. That's not healthcare, right? That's not what the bottom line was, just trying to make, we should be trying to heal the patient. Now, I understand, I'm not pointing fingers. I know what that administrative has, that's not an easy job either. And they have to play the game, but it's a game, right? What's not a game is what healthcare should be. I'm a physician, I have other staff, and we want to help the patient and work backwards from there. It's not being done. And so that's my own little soliloquy on that one.
Yeah, and kind of a lot of those issues, I think you've hinted at, you know, like a DPC style practice can yes. help you avoid that. So, you know, what do you see as the ability for DPC to potentially expand within the industry, understanding that when we're talking about expansion, that's probably focused on primary care as Correct. Opposed to many of the specialties?
Well, there are some specialties. There's something called direct specialty care that has now branched off that. But I'll give my plug for DPC. The bottom line is, if I had every family doctor and you said, listen, I guarantee you your full panel's filled for direct primary care and you get a monthly membership and you're getting paid as much as you were in the system, but you're seeing 8 patients a day and being complete, would you leave the system right now to do this? And they all would raise their hand, okay? So if that's true, that you all would raise your hand, then why isn't our organizations like the AFP saying, hey, let's push DPC because all these doctors are happier? It takes time because you go from a salary from and you have all these loans from an employer of a salary to zero money when you open your practice. In fact, you go negative because you got to now open a rent a building, get equipment, and it takes 2 years to get up to making money. And so that gap scares too many people. And I totally understand it. But that's the only physicians I've really been seeing that have been happy right now. When you see that's the joke. When you see a smiling doctor, it's somebody doing direct primary care. And it's not concierge care where we're making $1 million a year. It's $70 a month for a patient. We're not gouging patients, but patients are happy and doctors are happy. And we've realized, holy crap, these metrics didn't count. I don't have to fight with an insurance company. I don't have to make these fake notes. Review systems were irrelevant because that was just dogma. And people enjoy their lives again. So there is a way. Now, can we get the whole system back? That was the system 50 years ago. I'm not really sure why we accept what we have now.
Yeah, no, as you said, it's kind of a very interesting shift. But I think that's a very good food for thought, because believe it or not, we're already out of time. So okay. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Douglas Farrago, for a great conversation today.
I appreciate it. If people want to know about me, just go to physicianretention.com and you can find my book is there as well, on Amazon as well.
Yeah, and thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.